Star Wars Action News is brought to you exclusively by Brian's Toys. At briansToys.com, you can find Star Wars toys and collectibles from 1977 to the present. Brian's Toys has it all, from vintage toys and action figures right up to the latest releases. And when checking out, be sure to say you were referred to Brian's Toys by Star Wars Action News. So go check out the world's largest selection of Star Wars toys at briansToys.com.
Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you frontline reports from the Clone Wars. We are here to bring you recaps and comments on each episode of this new Star Wars adventure. This week's episode is Episode 4, Senate Spy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Republic Forces Radio Network. I'm Jerry, and I'm here to bring you this week's frontline report from the Clone Wars. We wanted to let you know that 4 episodes from now, Republic Forces Radio Network will no longer be available through the Star Wars Action News primary feed. If you want to keep getting each new episode of our Clone Wars podcast, you will need to subscribe to the Republic Forces Radio Network feed. You can find that feed at iTunes or on our homepage at republicforces.com. So subscribe now and get each new show as soon as it's released. If you tuned into the last 2 episodes of Republic Forces Radio Network, then you've heard the fantastic interview Arnie's been having with Tom Kane, the voice of Yoda. Well, Arnie is back with the conclusion of that discussion. Take it away, Arnie.
At San Diego Comic-Con, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners saw this on G4 as well, you and many of the other cast members did a live table reading. I know sometimes in animation, voices are recorded months apart. When you do Clone Wars, is it usually done collaboratively like that?
Most of the cast is there as a group. They record me separately because I don't live in Los Angeles anymore, so I have to do my stuff from where I am, which again, because it's Yoda, is not a problem. You know, the opening narrator is not connected to any other characters. So that's not an issue. Yoda usually is talking to people and telling them what to do. So it's not like he's interacting a lot, you know, with other characters. So because of just the odd character mix I have, it's easy to record me separately. So most of the cast, though, is there in a group, you know, recording things together. Sometimes because, you know, Ashley is an on-camera celebrity. Matt's an on-camera celebrity. You know, so sometimes their schedules don't allow them to be there. But for the most part, everybody does.
How far in advance is recording done?
Oh, geez, 9 months, 6 months, anywhere from 6 to 9 months, I think, from the time we record it to the time the episode's finished.
Are you still working on season 2 or possibly even season 3 at this point?
I believe we're just wrapping season 2. I'm pretty sure we're just down to the last couple episodes. So.
You said that you didn't have any access to any of the movies. As one of the actors, do you get to see the episodes in advance, or do you have to wait for broadcasts like the rest of us?
Oh, well, no. I mean, if I happen to be there, like if I was up at the ranch visiting, or sometimes Dave will bring an episode down to Los Angeles to record, then yeah, they'll show us bits and pieces. They wouldn't just show us a whole episode. Because, again, they're very, very tight on letting any plot lines out. But they definitely shows us bits and pieces. But the other, obviously, because the other cast is there in L.A., they get to see a lot more than I do because I'm just not there. And they, you know, obviously, they never, ever, ever, ever will send a chunk of anything over the Internet until it's been released. So a lot of, again, and I like that to some degree because that means I get to see, when it comes on the air, I get to watch it as a fan again because it's been 6 to 9 months since I recorded it. I've forgotten it. I'm kind of like, it's kind of like something I did a year ago. So, you know, so I get to be a fan.
You say that they're very tight-lipped. With the episodes, do you get the entire scripts or do you just get your pages?
No, I just get my pages. Now, the rest of the cast gets their whole script. They do not send me the whole script because, again, I'm not physically there because when you're physically there, they physically bring the scripts down from Lucasfilm, hand them out to the actors, we record the stuff, and then they collect them and take them home and shred them. Since they can't do that with me, and there's a possibility, obviously, something could get lost in, you know, UPS or FedEx or whatever, they send me only my pages. And then I actually return those pages via FedEx to be shredded.
Now, as I mentioned before, I got to see you at Chicago's Wizard World, and you were signing autographs there. And I know that adults like myself know that cartoons aren't real, but the Clone Wars being aimed at such a broad audience audience, including a younger audience. I was wondering how children react when you're there and doing Yoda's voice. Do they know you're Yoda?
Well, depends on the age of the kid. If they're little kids, I try to discourage the parents from asking me to do it, because if it's a 3, 4, 5 year old, to them that's a real thing. That's a real creature. It's a living, breathing, being. Some of these kids have seen all 6 of the movies, and to them that's just as real as Mark Hamill or Darth Vader or any of those guys. And to have the voice of Yoda coming out of a middle-aged guy with gray hair who's 6'5" is disturbing to them. So when they're little kids, I'm just like, nah, you don't really want me to do that, if they're 8 or 9 or 10 and they know by then that the guys that do cartoons are not, they know that that's not the real thing. So that's different. So I'm happy to do that. But when they're little kids, I'm like, nah, you don't really want me to do that.
Have you ever talked to Frank Oz about your Yoda voice?
No, I've only seen Frank once, a long time ago, and frankly was just kind of almost too nervous to even say anything. Someone told me that sometime last year he finally said something in an interview. They brought up me and the new stuff, and he said something along the lines of, yeah, he's okay. Well, I'll take that.
And in addition to doing the Yoda voice, you do the voice of the narrator. How did that come about?
Well, it was just in the course of auditioning for the new series. I didn't have to audition for Yoda. They knew that they wanted to use me for that. But there were all these other characters, so they brought me in to try my hand at anything from Jabba the Hutt to Admiral Yularen, which I got. And they knew just from me joking around, because that voice, that kind of voice, that old newsreel movie tone thing is something I do various versions of fairly regularly. So they knew I did that kind of thing because they'd heard me do like a newscaster, So they said, George wants to hear an old radio, like the beginning of the Lone Ranger or Superman, strange visitor from a distant galaxy, Superman, with powers far beyond those of mortal men, because that's what George, grew up on. And, which is really the genesis of Star Wars it's an old cowboy serial, just happens to be set in space.
And then you do the work of Admiral Yularen, and you just said you auditioned for that part. Given that that was a character from the original movies who never spoke, did you try very hard with the genesis of that voice, or did you just go British?
No, yeah, it was just, Dave Filoni was there at that point, and he just told me what he wanted. He said, I want to hear British, an imperial. I want to hear an imperial officer. We had this whole discussion, that at this point, whatever Yularen becomes by the time, episode 4 rolls around and we see him, on the Death Star or wherever he is first, however he gets to be there along with all these other Imperial officers, at some point they weren't bad guys. Some of them probably were, Tarkin probably was, but obviously in the case of Yularen, he wasn't a bad guy. He was at some point just an officer who, like many officers do, followed the orders he was given and sat and watched as everything else changed and not him, So that was a discussion Dave and I had, was, Yularen's not a bad guy at this point. So, and he may not have been a bad guy at the point you see him, in the movies, who knows, maybe he was secretly working with the good guys. We can only pretend.
And I must admit, with some of the Yoda items, there are times where I can't tell who's doing the voice. I know that you did, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Ask Yoda doll that came out.
Yeah, I've done that, and I've done a couple, several toys, some commercials. And
were you the one in the Pepsi ad?
Let me think. I know I recorded some Pepsi spots, but I'll be honest with you, I don't know. I don't remember. I know that some of that was Frank, and it may have all been Frank, because sometimes what they would do is record me and just sort of use me as a placeholder until Frank would come in and do it, until Frank just couldn't do it at all anymore because he was off, busy. So, that does happen sometimes with me and the characters I do. So my answer to that is I don't know. I think it was mostly Frank, though.
And there was one other toy that came out around the time of Episode 3. It was a storytelling Yoda. And I was wondering if that was you.
I'd have to see it. It sounds really bad, but after having six kids, I forget what I did last week, much less two or three or four or five or six of, you know, years ago. I know there have been a couple toys that were done that were not me because they were done by, like a restaurant chain or something as part of a giveaway. So it wasn't something that was part of Lucasfilm. So sometimes they hire people up in Canada to do it for $12, you know, because they don't want to pay anything. So I know that there have been a few things like that.
As a fan, are you excited about what you know of in season two?
Oh, yeah. Everybody's going to love season two. The thing that's really nice about Clone Wars is people are, they're really sort of reevaluating their first impression. You know, and even George said this, you know, when we were at the premiere, he said, you know, it's almost unfortunate that the first thing anyone's going to see of this series are the first three episodes. And that's what the movie was. The movie was just the first three episodes of this series. And the Warner Brothers people wanted to turn it into a feature film. That wasn't George's idea. That was Warner Brothers. And as far as I know, that was never George's intention from the beginning to release it as a feature film. So he just said, you know, it's our first three episodes. It's the first three we wrote. It's the first three we voiced. It's the first three we animated. And, had anybody just sat and watched those on television, they would have been blown away. But, you know, again, it's the same thing I was talking about with episodes 1, 2, and 3. People went into the theater expecting, I don't know what, expecting Star Wars again, you know, like the absolute original thing. And then nothing can live up to that. Nothing. And so, you know, and it was different. You know, it had this narrator at the beginning. There was no crawl. And it just, I think that alone threw people. I know it did. I mean, there was tons of debate as to why it wasn't exactly the same opening, you know, as it always was. And the funny part is people have now gone, hey, wait a minute, that narrator and the sort of the recap of what's going to happen actually works great on a TV series as it was meant to. Again, George was right. He's like, yeah, he wanted that whole, like the old radio dramas, you know, except on television. And it works in that venue perfectly. So it's really nice, though, to see so many guys that were just so mad and so bothered because, again, it wasn't the same. And they wanted it the same. Well, nothing can be the same. But they wanted it the same. And so people got, you know, fussy. And it's just nice to see just millions of them are now going, they're just rabid fans of the show. And I say to them and to everyone else, if you liked where the series was going in season one, you're going to love season two even more. It's more of everything that you like. That's more bad guys, more explosions, more bounty hunters, more fights, more everything. So.
Well, great. Tom, thank you so much for taking the time
to
talk to us. It's been a lot of fun. And I'm sure that we look forward to seeing all that is coming in season two.
Well, enjoy it, you will. Foreseen it, I have. Yeah.
Now on to this week's episode, Senate Spy. The fortune cookie for this week's episode is A True Heart Should Never Be Doubted. The newsreel brings us right into this week's plot.
The Jedi Council suspects that Senator Rush Clovis is secretly taking part in a separatist conspiracy.
The show kicks off with Anakin coming home from a hard day at the office. I mean the battlefield. And Anakin, being the thoughtful husband that he is, has brought home takeout.
You called this home.
But the reunion doesn't last long as Obi-Wan is trying to get a hold of the young Jedi lover. Anakin eventually responds and to Padme's disappointment meets with the Jedi Council.
Duty comes first, especially in wartime.
The council briefs Anakin on the exploits of a one Senator Rush Clovis who represents the Intergalactic Banking Clan. They have been unsuccessful in getting Padme to help them get information on Clovis, but they believe Anakin can convince her otherwise.
Trust you she does, Skywalker. That is why convince her you must.
Anakin goes as the council instructs, but he has no intentions of influencing her. After a brief lover spat, Padme takes the assignment despite Anakin and his jealousy of Clovis.
Don't take it personally, Anakin. Duty comes first.
I guess those words came back and bit you, huh, Anakin? She then meets with the council to formulate a strategy. We then see Padme having dinner with Senator Clovis.
It's been good to see you again, Clovis.
They discuss old times, and Padme manages to work her way into a trip to Cato Nemoidia with Clovis.
I've got an idea. Come with me to Cato Nemoidia and speak to them in person.
With Anakin undercover as a Naboo pilot, they take off. They land on Cato Nemoidia to meet with Senator Lot Dodd.
Senator Amidala, an unexpected privilege.
Padme is escorted to her room by two Betty droids. Meanwhile, Clovis meets with Dodd and Poggle the Lesser in the library to discuss the construction of a new droid factory. Dodd and Pog will try to renegotiate a higher percentage of profits from the banking plant, but Clovis won't hear of it. Dodd decides that they may have some leverage over Clovis in this situation if they poison Padme and use the antidote as a bargaining chip.
I think Clovis would do anything to save her.
Dodd then meets up with Padme and Clovis in the Grand Hall and offers to share a drink with Padme. He slyly adds poison to the cup after he takes his drink, and Padme falls for it hook, line, and sinker. Padme then accompanies Clovis on a tour of the manor, and as the symptoms of the poison begin to take effect, she asks Clovis to get her a drink. He rushes off to get her a refreshment. As she is alone in the library, she turns on the holoprojector and gets the file data with information regarding the droid factory. Meanwhile, Anakin has become impatient, and 3PO directs him to the library to find Padme and Clovis. Padme throws herself at Clovis to hide the fact she swiped the data card. Anakin enters at this time, but Padme is able to drop the card for him to grab with the Force. Anakin returns to R2-D2 with the data card. By this time, Padme is feeling worse and faints in Clovis's arms.
Padme, what's wrong?
He gets her back to her quarters and orders 3PO to summon a medical droid. Clovis then confronts Dodd.
I know her symptoms. She's been poisoned.
Dodd breaks the news to Clovis of Padme's true intentions.
She is a Republic spy.
Anakin barges in just in time as Clovis is confronting Padme about spying on him.
The hologram disc is gone. I see now why you renewed our friendship.
Anakin wants to take Padme to Coruscant, but Clovis realizes there's no time and that Dodd must have an antidote.
Give me the antidote or you're dead!
This works, and Anakin gets Padme under a ship to administer the cure. However, not before leaving Clovis behind.
But I have a lot of faith in your survival skills.
The episode ends with Clovis being confronted by Lot Dodd and a group of battle droids.
Clovis, we need to talk.
Now let's go on to this week's roundtable discussion. Alright, everybody, welcome to this week's roundtable discussion. Let's go down the line, introduce yourselves, and tell us what you thought of this week's episode, Senate Spy.
Alright, this is Jason, also known as Darth Prime on the forums, and Star Wars Action News webmaster. Overall, I have to say this is an okay episode. After Arnie's teasing last week of this being a Troy episode for you Star Trek fans, I ended up liking this one a lot more than I thought I would, but it was still just middle of the road. It ended up being a very talky episode. I also thought it was a very full episode where they tried to almost shoehorn too much. I liked the fact that they had elements of political and romantic intrigue that were underlying in the episode, but I thought there was some of it was unrealized for the sake of having some kind of poison plot just to add tension. It was not the best, not the worst, and it's definitely a change of pace following the Cad Bane Holocron saga.
Hey, this is Dave. I really liked this episode. For an episode that had virtually no action in it, it did a good job of keeping me entertained, and just it probably went over the heads of the usual audience member, which is boys ages 6 to 14. But for the older audience, it hit something that shows like a good political side of the war, and I think that really like push this series along.
Hey, this is Barrett, Master Collect 'em All from the forums, coming to you from a certain point of view. I really enjoyed this episode. I agree with Dave that this episode, someone had mentioned last roundtable, that I think it was Arnie, that these episodes are not kind of directed towards our age group, but I think this one was. It didn't have a lot of action in it, but it did have a lot of marriage strife, which I can relate to. I'm sure that if anybody has a wife, they can relate to that. There wasn't very much action, no lightsabers, no blasters. In fact, the only blaster we really did see kind of looked like marshmallow peep. But I really enjoyed this episode.
All right. This is Jerry, Republic Forces Radio Network. And I just wanted, I just needed to say that I gotta admit, this episode just did not do it for me. I think StarWars.com made a specific point to, if you go down to the episode guide and you go into some of the trivia and details, it talks about how not a single blaster is fired in this episode, nor is a lightsaber. Just like you said, Baron, lightsaber ignited, nor does anything explode. And you know what? It really shows to me. This episode, I hate to say this because we talk a lot about it being kind of, written with kids in mind, it's a kid children's show, but I have to think, stepping back for a second, I have to wonder what child enjoyed this episode. I really did not enjoy this episode at all. I mean, I felt it was a throwaway story. We'll get into some of the details. It introduced new situations and new characters that are now, as far as I can tell, no longer part of the series just because of how they wrapped it all up. So I don't mind such a cerebral episode if you're going to introduce things that's going to be important, you know, throughout the series or maybe throughout the season. To me, this was just a filler, and it just didn't do it for me. Didn't do it for me at all. So that being said, let's get into some of the details. Let's just start with the plot. The plot of this episode was that there's this new senator, which I don't think anyone's heard of before. His name is Rush Clovis. And I'm a little confused in my details. I believe he represents, they mention an area, a plan or something that he represents, but it seems like that he represents the banking clan, and they believe that he's in league with the separatists, so they get Padme to go spy on him. What'd you guys think of the overall plot?
All right, from an overall plot standpoint, I could kind of go with that. They're, getting back to the senator representing the banking clan, that gets to a whole WTF thing I was trying to figure out regarding some of the politics in the Star Wars universe, and maybe we can talk about that a little bit later. But I really kind of went with it. If they have to have a spy, I kind of liked how they hooked Padme into it being a past someone who was just more than friends with Senator Clovis, and I kind of thought that was going to sow some really interesting seeds for jealousy. And I was really hoping to see how that was going to pay off. And that was the main crux. If they went with that, with the jealousy and some of the political stuff, that's fine. But later on, we find out that there's this whole poisoning thing that they try to do to Padme. That part I thought they didn't need. That part seemed extra. It just seemed to get in the way and was really throwaway and resolve. And it pretty much blossomed and resolved like nothing. So that part I could see you getting rid of. But give me maybe I'm being a little bit of a dissension from your point of view, Jerry, but I could see where the kids might have a hard time following an episode like this, and I kind of was sitting back watching this, and I was kind of thinking the same thing, particularly when Anakin and Padme were speaking in the Senate chamber, like some kid's going to find this boring, but I was kind of looking to see where it was going as something more quote-unquote adult with the show.
Okay. Dave, what do you think?
Well, actually, as you were saying, the what kid would find this interesting? I hadn't thought of that previously, but now that you said it, I'm now realizing this whole episode was almost like, if you take it out of the Star Wars universe, it's almost like a fairy tale for like young girls, because it's the it's like Padme is like finding an old love who we know is evil, but she doesn't want to believe it, but he's very two-faced, and I don't know, it's hard to describe, but it's almost like a fairy tale. Almost even like the poisoning and the just the way the whole thing turns out. And then at the very end, Anakin, her knight in shining armor, comes to save her.
I thought it was very soap opera-ish with a past flame that sneaks up and poisoning. Seems something straight out of Days of Our Lives or something. As the galaxy turns.
You know, that's you know, both you guys actually hit on a very interesting comparison. The fairy tale, the soap opera. You're right. I mean, I think the soap opera one resonates a little bit with me more just because it's like, hey, what past are you talking about? And what, you know, how well did you actually know this guy? It's like he's looking for a, you know, a background check on her all of a sudden now that he realizes that, I guess, maybe he wasn't, you know, the first love interest, at least beside the Paulo character mentioned in episode 2.
Well, this episode was definitely not for children 7 to 12 years old. This episode was definitely for guys in their 30s and 40s. Because it starts off where, first of all, I really like this story. It starts off and you're panning into Padme's house, and, you know, it kind of pans around when Anakin is coming in with the food. And if anybody's been married, you know, you bring your wife some food sometimes when she's hungry. It showed a big panoramic scene of Coruscant with all the ships flying. And this episode was a character fleshing out episode. It really showed you that Padme and Anakin are married. They really love each other. I mean, if you watch the movies, it really kind of fast forwards their whole relationship. I know some people read the books, some people don't read the books. I kind of read the books sometimes when I have a chance, but my main history is the movies, what's on screen, and they kind of rush through that whole thing about how they fell in love and why would they love each other, you know, why wouldn't they just meet after a long time and just say, okay, this is my friend, you know, senator, whatever. I really like seeing this. I you know, watching this episode kind of reminded me of some of the episodes in the Star Wars universe, such as Luke Skywalker when he's training with Yoda on Dagobah. You know, there are no blasters in those scenes. There's no, you know, lightsabers in those scenes. But those are some of the stronger scenes where he tells him, you know, do or do not. There is no try. You know, a little bit of action here and there, but mostly it's just a lot of characterization and you kind of feel for him. One thing I really did like about this episode was just the whole marriage aspect of it. You know, Anakin, one time when he's talking to Padme in the Senate chambers, and he tells her, you know, you're not going to do this. And if anybody who's been married, you don't talk to your wife like that. I know he's been talking to clones a lot, but you just don't talk to your wife like that and expect her to do it, you know, what you wanted to do.
You know, that's a great that's a good segue into my next topic, which was the marital situations that we see. At number one, you're right. I think it's hilarious. You know, when I first heard that line where Anakin says, "Well, you know, our duty comes first, especially in the time of war." Yeah, Anakin, not a lecture you need to be giving right now. That's not good timing, no matter if you're correct or not. And I loved how Padme threw that right back at him about 5 minutes later in the episode. I mean, I was sitting there watching the show and I went, "Ooh, burn," because she repeated the exact same line to him. Jason, I'll start with you. What'd you think about the characterization that we saw between Padme and Anakin here in terms of their relationship?
Okay. Well, first of all, I did like how they had the opening peek inside the Skywalker home. And it's interesting that, you know, Anakin does call it home. It's showing that he has that level of attachment there, more so to Padme than, you know, he doesn't consider the Jedi Temple his home, which I thought that was an interesting thing. But and I did like how, you know, I brought home dinner from the Outer Rim or wherever it was before his convoy got destroyed. But then I kind of thought it seemed like they tried to kind of devolve into some kind of lover's quarrel or something like that. I mean, I don't remember what the exact dialogue was, but it gets back to the whole point you guys are making where, you know, duty comes, you know, before everything else. So I kind of thought they were trying to show a little bit of lover's quarrel, and I thought it was kind of starting to sow some seeds of doubt, or of mistrust, which would kind of go back into the fortune cookie hook with about a trusting heart. But then when it got back into the Senate chamber, I couldn't figure out if Anakin was using some reverse psychology because the council tapped him to convince Padme to spy on him, or if he was really expressing his doubts as a husband where he didn't want her to do that. I couldn't quite tell. Anakin.
Just to interject, I thought that was totally him being like, "Hey, no, bad idea. No wife of mine's gonna jump into a situation." I didn't think that was reverse psychology at all. I just thought it was, "You stay home, woman."
Yeah, well, the only reason I thought it might have been reverse psychology for a minute was because I thought the council had told Anakin to try to convince Padme. But looking at Anakin's face at the end, where he was clearly upset that she's gone ahead and do that, regardless of what he says, that's what made me think it wasn't, but I wasn't quite 100% sure. I might have been reading extra into there, and that just shows what strong character Padme is. Like, well, you're going to tell me this. I'm going to do whatever I want. The hell with you.
How about the Jedi Council? Now, Obi-Wan clearly knows at this point that they are married, because at the time that Obi-Wan says, you know, or he says that, I think they mentioned to Anakin that they've had a past relationship, and Obi-Wan clearly makes a look like, that's your lady we're sending out. I mean, he clearly knows. Did anybody catch that?
I caught the look, but I caught the look, but I didn't think that the Jedi quite really knew yet, because I thought it was more like Anakin said something like, "I didn't know that," and the Jedi's like, "Well, why would you know that?" And it's just kind of like, you know, what's going on? I didn't think they really figured out the whole marriage thing yet, and I thought that. But of course, I haven't read some of that EU stuff like Wild Space, so maybe they do more. No more than what's going on. But what I thought was that he was able to blow off the Jedi Council for 7 clicks, or what was that, like 7 hours, and they don't bother, you know, where's Anakin?
That goes to my point that Obi-Wan clearly knows that they're married. Maybe not the whole Jedi Council knows, but Obi-Wan clearly knows, because he paged the guy's not coming, they know they're on Coruscant, he clearly knows where Anakin is.
Well, does he know that they're actually married? Because obviously he knows that, like, they're close, but I mean, does Obi-Wan have that much doubt in Anakin for him to break that rule of marriage?
Well, Obi-Wan has a girlfriend that we're going to see.
Oh, yeah.
Later on.
Okay.
He does have a girlfriend, so maybe Qui-Gon, maybe they'll show some sort of background where Qui-Gon's, you know, wagging his finger at Obi-Wan talking about connections. But one of the points I want to bring about the Jedi Council is that they are willing. We are seeing what the Jedi Council is willing to do to win this war. They're willing to put a senator, a trusted senator, in harm's way to get some information on their enemies. We talked about a little bit last time about how they actually tortured Cad Bane to try to get him to take him to the Jedi younglings in the Holocron. And this is just another thing that what are the Jedi willing to do? You know, what are they willing to do? They're willing to put a senator in harm's way. Are they willing to torture? You know, what's next? I find that very, very interesting in this episode.
I thought it was interesting. You mentioned putting a senator in danger. Out of all the senators they could possibly pick, and aside from the whole Clovis aspect, they picked Padme. And I don't think Padme is ever your damsel in distress type character. I think they know full well that she is a very capable, strong, and independent woman, which is part of the reason why they tapped her. If she could survive in the Geonosis arena with the rest of the Jedi, I think they know she has a little bit of metal to her, and you know, it's not just throwing anybody into the wind. It's someone they know, someone who they know is capable, and someone that they trust.
That leads to my point. She is a very capable ally to them. And for them, you know, that she can handle herself. You know, we've seen she can handle herself. But for the Jedi to say Padme, you know, because she could full well be killed. I mean, we know she's not because we know she's in episode 3. We know how she dies. But at this point in time, you know, they're putting her in harm's way. And she's arguably the most trusted ally the Jedi's have. And for them to make that decision and not come up with a plan B, I find that very interesting.
Is it kind of funny, though, that Padme is like the only other, you know, the only senator, though, that is capable of anything? I mean, obviously Clovis is the one who's doing the dastardly deed, but it's like, but it seems like Padme is the only one, you know, like she's the one that flies into the malevolence. She's the one involved in the, you know, Naboo with that virus or whatever we had from last season. She's the one that the Jedi Council has to call in. I guess on some levels, though, it makes sense because she was also the only senator who was involved in the Geonosis battle arena. So I guess they probably looked at her and said, hey, you know, she's got some of the Sputna or whatever to go out there and help us out. And, you know, conveniently, she had this past relationship with Clovis. Speaking of which, kind of moving on, I think your guys' points on the marriage thing's right on. Just to wrap up that topic, personally, I did enjoy a little bit seeing the strain that the war is having on their marriage. I think that is something that is very much understood from the films. I don't think it requires further investigation from this show, but it does. It is kind of nice to show that hey, they're gonna show the various aspects. To me, it's the same thing. Like, you know, I enjoyed last season seeing Obi-Wan and Anakin's camaraderie because of everything we hear in the Revenge of the Sith novel about how those two are inseparable and, you know, they could single-handedly win the war and they're heroes to everybody. So from that perspective, I like it. But it was funny. I realized where we were at, you know, going into the second commercial, or let's say between the second and third segment, it occurred to me, I was like, holy cow, this show is two-thirds over, and we're just getting started with the exposition, blah, 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 and now let's get into what the senator's up to. And I just thought it kind of dragged it out a little bit. But that being said, we've got Clovis. What'd you guys think about Clovis? And help me rationalize Cato and Imordia as a neutral world or a still a Republic world? I would think that would be like hostile territory now after episode 2.
Yes, this is the part that really took me out of the episode. So, you know, so we know that the Separatists consists of the Trade Federation, Banking Clan, Techno Union, you know, and then they commit their people and resources. And we know that the Republic is at war with the Separatists, but then why would the Separatists or the Banking Clan still have a representative in the Republic Senate? Why would they have senators? I didn't understand that at all. And then, you know, they also mentioned Padme was looking for some concessions or some kind of negotiations with the Trade Federation or whatever excuse she gave as to why it makes sense to bring her to Cato Neomodia. And it's like, that's like a Separatist stronghold. We all know Nuke Gunray's been gunning for her head since the Phantom Menace. and that's going straight into the lion's den. That did not make any sense why there'd be that senatorial relationship, why it would even make sense for Padme to go there. And even, you know, if Padme's supposed to be spying, it's like nowhere in the episode did she like decide to turn code on the Republic, where it would make sense for her to be even going into a separatist stronghold. They know this is Padme Amidala. This is Ms. Republic herself. What's going on? I mean, that whole aspect of, I mean, it was kind of, I was hoping it would pay off, but it didn't make any sense.
I mean, Lot Dodd was, correct me if I'm wrong, but was not Lot Dodd the senator from episode one that kind of shoots out into the Senate Rotunda while Queen Amidala at the time was asking for help from the Senate because of the Trade Federation? Wasn't he the Senate to come in? Everybody in the chat saying yeah. So and Senator Chancellor Valorum says, you know, hey, we've not recognized the senator from the Trade Federation. That's Lot Dodd. So she shows up and he's like, oh, hey, Senator, Senator Amidala, what a pleasure to see you. And they're like, oh, let's start over. Let's have new beginnings. You know,
that would make sense because that would make sense because in my my notes that I put, I noted that they were talking about like a fresh start and second chances and stuff. And I was thinking, what are they talking about? I had no idea. So, I mean, now that I know that Lot Dodd was the one in episode one, that makes so much more sense.
But but he's still Nemodian, who's still at war with the Republic, would that kind of trump that too? He wasn't saying, you know, let's have peaceful negotiations to end the war.
Yeah,
it was strange.
Yeah, but you think that ship has passed now because of episode two. If this series took place between episodes one and two, you could argue that, hey, you know, Newt Gunray and that other guy were nuts, but hey, let's start over. But no, I think we're way too far gone now.
Well, here's the thing. Clovis didn't really tell Dodd that he was bringing Padme. You know, he was trying to rekindle a friendship, quote unquote, with Padme. And I think there's a scene right there where they didn't even tell the Nemoidian that they were bringing Padme on. So it kind of makes sense in that regard that Clovis was trying to get away with Padme and trying to rekindle his friendship. And in fact, that's when they're sitting and having dinner. He even says to her, I'm more interested in your friendship than in your politics. So I just kind of, you know, erased that. I just kind of took that for what it was, is, you know, he wanted to kind of take her away. And by the way, did you see that bedroom that she had? I mean, that bedroom was fit for a family. I mean, they had another panoramic views where it panned around the bed and it showed the beautiful sky of Cato Nemoidia. And I was sitting there counting the pillows on that bed.
Okay, can I stop you right there? That tells me how boring the show was then.
But I think it totally paid off. I think it totally paid off. She acted like a damsel in distress. Oh, I'm going to walk around, C-3PO. What she was doing, she was snooping around. She was a very good spy. You know, she walked up to Dodd and Clovis, and I can't remember what the other creature's name was, but they, you know, they were discussing this droid factory. I mean, she was a very, very good spy planning the damsel in distress.
Padme did her job perfectly. She distracted Clovis from the task. She made him kind of doubt what he was doing, got his eye off the ball, for instance. She was able to get the information. I think, you know, she was perfect. She was perfect in the role there. And you know, and that's why the council brought her in, because I think they knew they could use the power of persuasion from an old lover to sneak in there and change things. Now, what did we think of Clovis? What were your guys' thoughts on Clovis as a character?
He was kind of the same way I felt about Captain Argaius, which actually coincidentally is played by the same guy. But the I liked him at first, and then I didn't like him, and then I liked him again, and then I started not to like him, and then I ended up liking him by the end. I mean, like, he was really nice and polite, but then, like, on the ship, on the way to Cato Nemoidia, he was kind of being a scumbag, trying to get with Padme, like, right away. I thought that was kind of a sketchy move on his part. But, like, as soon as they walked in, he was, you can rest your head on my shoulders if you're tired. And then he tried going in right for a kiss. But then, like, by the end, he you could tell he truly loved her. And I don't know, I liked that about him. It was
he may have truly loved her, but I thought he was a douche. if I could say that.
Yeah,
it seemed like he was more on an intergalactic booty call with Padme around. I'm going to try to rekindle that flame. When he even said he wanted to be more friends, he didn't care about the politics. It's just like, you know, now that I got you alone here on Kato Neomordia, hey baby, how about we try out that nice sunny moon suit that Don hooked us up with? I didn't like him. And I kind of felt that, you know, at the end when he was facing off with Anakin and, you know, there was, arguing about how to best help Padme, that shows he did really cherish Padme. And I thought, you know, when Bot Dodd called him back after the ship took off, you know, I thought, you know, he knew he was walking basically to his, you know, to a firing squad, to his own execution, is kind of how I put it, you know. And maybe there was some act of redemption at the end, but I kind of thought that the bugger was getting what was coming to him. I did not like him as a character. I mean, he was someone I guess I kind of loved to hate in the episode, and kind of thought he got what he had coming.
Well, at least he didn't pull the old line, hey baby, the speakers only work in the back of the starship.
I have to totally disagree. I'm sorry. I really like this guy. You never know why he was a traitor. We never got that backstory. Was he trying to get money for his sick daughter? Was his twin brother went over there? You know, you never got the reason why. Is it for the money? We never got the reason why he's a traitor. But I'll tell you why I liked him. First of all, Padme went to him. He didn't come to Padme and say, let me take you, you know, to this planet. You know, they sent Padme to him. When, as far as I understand, as soon as Padme cut off the relationship, you know, he left her alone. You know, the password for, you know, the hologram was Padme. As soon as he finds out that Padme is poisoned, you know, he goes right up to Dodd and says, look, you know, she's poisoned. I want the antidote. What are you doing? And, you know, all the way to taking her off the ship. You know, and saying, you know, we're going to take her back, pulling a gun. If you want to call that a gun, like I said, it looked more like a peep, a silver colored peep. Looked like he was pointing his finger at Dodd. But he took one for the team at the end. He took one for the team. And let me bring this up about Anakin, by the way. How cold blooded was that not to let that man in that ship after he discovered Padme was poisoned? He forced Dodd to give him the antidote, and Anakin leaves him there to die. I found that was very, very interesting, a very fleshing out of Anakin's character. And also, let me say this last thing. Anakin was more patient in this episode than we've seen him in any other episode. This guy is hugging his wife, kissing his wife, having dinner with his wife. And Anakin does not, you know, give him one of these where he sneezes. He just kind of like works with the guy. And I think he showed a lot of patience in this episode.
I got to admit, though, that the whole thing, that really caught me off guard that he just left him there. I thought that was very dark and vengeful. I mean, I think really the reaction should have been, hey, come on in here. Let's go and you'll get your justice.
Well, I thought it was more Anakin's jealousy coming out, because I kind of thought, you know, back on the ship, when they're leaving, Padme even says, you know, you had no reason to doubt me. And I really think Anakin had some severe jealousy issues there, seeing this old flame. And I mean, how many of you, if you have significant others, you know, do you get, you know, a little jealous or feel a little awkward if, you know, that former ex comes up in a conversation? And I don't think it was that out of character, actually, for Anakin to leave him there to kind of get his revenge, because Anakin's always been more emotional. And I could tell it kind of seemed to me that when he was waiting outside for Padme to send the signal, that I thought he was kind of antsy, and that, yes, he knew he had to be patient, but it was for the mission. Otherwise, he would have been all up in that guy, all up in Clovis's face when he emerged in the bedroom after Padme had been poisoned. I was half expecting Anakin to either punch him or force choke him.
I agree. I was too, but he didn't. He was very patient. He worked with the guy, and then he leaves the guy to burn. And, you know, that was the dark side. You know, this whole, these episodes, you don't see Anakin turning to the dark side. You don't see him revengeful. You know, he is the shining Jedi Knight with all these powers that he apparently doesn't use. But he, you know, to leave that guy to die right there, it was very, very powerful. Very powerful.
I thought the last line was funny, though. He said, you know, I have great faith in your survival skills. I thought that was a good bit of comedy there. But when I actually thought about what he was doing, it would have been so easy to just pull him on the ship and like, hey, let's get out of this together. And Clovis, you are now under arrest. You know, that I think would have been the appropriate thing. I mean, overall, the thing about Clovis is that, and I think one of the things that bothered me about the episode, to be honest with you, is that we get introduced to Clovis. We actually get a pretty decent episode as to who Clovis is. And, you know, his background with Padme, kind of, you know, I think, I forget which one of you guys mentioned it, but yeah, Padme came back to him. He was the one, I guess, who was dumped based on what, you know, Padme had had said earlier to the Jedi Council, is that, you know, she was the one that wanted to return it to a more professional, or a strictly professional. So, you know, I hope that he used Padme as a password after they rekindled, like he just recently changed it. If that had been the password that he had been using for things all along, then I'd be just like, hey, Clovis, dude, live in the now, man, get over here. Here she enters his life again, and poor guy, he really does forsake his treachery, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. And of course, you know, no one who's doing wrong thinks they're the one in the wrong in a situation like that. He was, I guess, looking out for the best interest of the banking clan and just doing what, I guess, as a banking clan, you're more interested in the return on investment, maybe more so than political maneuvering. But, yeah, Anakin reveals it for us. You know, Clovis, it's good to see that you have a heart, but I'm going to leave your sorry butt here to get slaughtered anyway. So, I don't know, the whole episode was like, okay, you gave us a good character, who I thought was a pretty decent character in Clovis, and you wrap it up in a nice little bow, and it's not going to go anywhere. Now, I suppose there's a possibility that Clovis does not get, you know, roasted right then and there, but I'm assuming that we won't see him again.
Actually, the thing they did with the whole firing squad thing, I think they did that really well, because I missed it Friday night, so I had to watch it on iTunes Saturday morning, and I was watching it with my roommate. So at the end, when he's walking back, my roommate Brendan, he said, what are they going to talk about? And I said, nothing. They're going to shoot him. He was like, what are you talking about? I had to rewind it. And like the way the camera angle is set up, you're just usually looking at Clovis. But if you look, past that and look past Clovis and at Lockdod and Poggle the Lesser, they nod at each other, and then the battle droids raise their rifles. So I think little kids probably missed that completely. And it wasn't even in the Star Wars guide. It just ends with Padme and Anakin just flying off. They don't even mention, hey, this guy is going to get, like, slaughtered. And I think that was a good move on their part, for the creator's part.
I have a question regarding Clovis, and maybe this is some EU that's there. I'm not remembering it correctly. But isn't there some cut scene in Attack of the Clones where Anakin meets Padme's parents and they're going through her room, and doesn't she mention something about, I don't know if it was a past boyfriend or just someone that she knew. I mean, I don't think she named him as Clovis, but I kind of was just thinking maybe this was like a nod to that, some of that cut stuff out of Attack of the Clones, where Anakin got to learn a little bit about Padme's past relationships, and I think he showed a little bit of jealousy there too. Does anybody know if there's any kind of connection like that, or if I'm just pulling that out of my rear?
Well, according to StarWars.com, at the bottom of the whole guide, it said that the original script was going to have Pado or whatever it was, who she mentioned in episode 2. It was like a young boy in episode 2. But for some reason, they changed it to a random senator that we'd never met before.
Well, Paolo was, the way she described Paolo was is that he gave up politics and became an artist or something. So it'd been kind of weird to bring him back into it, especially since I think she indicated they were like 12 or something at that time. So
yeah,
it'd been a stretch. I think that'd been cool because at least would have given us, you know, if they could have done it properly without some, you know, mixed, retconning, I guess, if you want to call it that. At least it would have been some connection to someone that we know she had a past that we've been aware of. Now, Jason, to your point, I don't remember anything from that cut scene. I mean, I remember the scene where they're looking at pictures of, you know, refugees from planets, you know, kind of some of her charity work, I guess, she had done. I don't remember too well. But I just did a quick Wikipedia on Rush, and he has no background other than this episode, although for whatever reason, and this certainly isn't official, I guess, but they do describe him as a senator of Scipio as well as the intergalactic banking clan. So I don't know if that means he has a dual position or if the banking clan is what planet banking clan's on. I'm really confused on really who he represents. I mean, the opening newsreel mentions Scipio, but the show treats him like he is a sole representative of the banking clan. So I'm confused on all that.
Maybe Scipio's part of the banking clan. Or something. Maybe he's a representative under the table, or I don't know, some secret thing.
Well, that goes back to my whole question of what's going on with the politics here. That's I would have just liked to have known what's going on, just so that's a little bit clear, just because it all seemed foggy. And I mean, we talk about, you know, somebody thought, you know, Clovis was, you know, a really well developed character, but when you don't have stuff like that, or at least it bothered me that they couldn't even fully establish how he is in league with the banking clan, but still in the Senate, other than the fact that he was just a spy or working with them. I it didn't quite jive.
I mean, we know that the banking clan, I don't know if this was, you know, solely this, but like in the Genndy Tartakovsky series, Moonalist, if I'm pronouncing that right, was the planet that the banking clan was on. We have Sand Hill, who's a Mun, M-U-U-N, however that's pronounced. So I'm not sure why there's a human, let's say, who's representing. To your point, Jason, that's poor background, although I don't think that's necessarily the character of Clovis, but you're right. Really, what is the political moving here? Because all we really know is that they're looking to build. What I interpreted was that the banking clan was financing the droid factory, and I guess to sell the product to the separatists to where there'd be lots of profit. So he's certainly involved in all of this because of the rate of return, the profits, and, you know, war profiteering is what it sounds like to me. But but to your point, I'm not really sure exactly what that whole plot was. If anybody in the chat's got some ideas, I'm reading away. But that being said, does anybody have any other topics or thoughts they want to discuss? I actually kind of anticipated this would be in sort of a short one because not a whole lot happened.
See, I have to disagree. I thought a lot of characterization happened. We know, I mean, we see a lot of how Padme and Anakin's dynamic works. One thing I did want to bring up, though, was when I look at these episodes, I always try to make a wish list of what action figures they may or may not make. And the two droids, the two quote-unquote female droids that are showing Padme to her room,
the Betty
I could
droids.
Not yeah. – what are they called?
The Betty droids.
The Betty droids. These two droids, I mean, I spaceballs all the way. It was –
It's not that, Matrix.
All I kept was wanting them to say is, can we talk? You know?
Rivers' character, right.
It was Joan Rivers. I was like, did they get these models from Spaceballs? I mean, they had the hair and the little gold skirt, and C-3PO didn't look twice in their direction. Okay? So that's a whole other story about C-3PO, which, by the way, was not very much C-3PO. I mean, when C-3PO is on in screen, you know, he's kind of the nervous character, and he kind of makes jokes, and he doesn't want to do anything, and he was just kind of walking around in the background. C-3PO, we're done with you. Are you sure? It's like, you know, I wanted Anthony Daniels to say, are you sure? But I am, you know, tested for 32 blah, 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 blah. You know, you want C-3PO to kind of, you know, to say something, and he really didn't say anything in this episode.
I have that in my notes. I'm like, why is 3PO even here? I mean, I know he's Padme's droid, but his whole accomplishments the entire episode were being dismissed twice. I mean, does Anthony need a paycheck? Does Anthony need a paycheck that bad?
He makes one joke. He says, the one joke he made, and I have this in my notes. He says, no one seems to want my company right now. That's the joke you make? I mean, you know, come on. You could have made the joke about shining up the other two robots, you know, anything. But he was so boring. You know, you kind of want C-3PO to have the pizzazz. You know what I mean? And if you know what I'm talking about, pizzazz.
I thought he was there as partly a conduit between what Padme's doing and what Anakin's waiting for. Like, 3PO and R2 were kind of like the back and forth talk. But yeah, he keeps getting dismissed, so he's kind of missing out on all the action. But Anakin does kind of get in his face and said, hey, why did you leave her? Why'd you let her go alone? But, you know, good point. 3PO, and the, you know, when you get Tony Daniels, and I call him Tony, we're close, but when you get Tony Daniels to do an episode of the show, you know, maybe he came in and recorded 4 or 5 episodes in a shot. I don't know. Maybe it's that easy. He only did a few lines, but it seems like you'd use, you're right, Barrett. I guess you get a little bit more use out of 3PO.
You don't hire James Earl Jones to breathe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You want him to say something. You know.
Well, and I think episode 3 contradicts what you just said. There.
to breathe and to scream no. Frank
and
Vader.
What a great job he did. Thank you very much.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Actually, I noticed 2 things right away. The narration doesn't give any reasoning why the Jedi suspects Clovis. Even the council has like no evidence. It just say like we suspect him for whatever reason, but they don't say anything. They just kind of say, "All right, you Padme, spy on him. We need answers." But I mean, what answers? Like, what questions need answered?
Well, one of my questions that needs to be answered was, why was Clovis's gun so small? Okay, I know we have higher technology. I brought this up already, but come on, you couldn't get him, anything else. And so you're speaking of the beginning when they do the narration. They have one scene in the beginning where it shows Wat Tambor, Grievous, Dooku, and I think Asajj Ventress, and they're all kind of standing looking at something and totally not used. Was that used in a previous episode?
That's like a shot straight out of the movie. That's like the first shot of the movie.
Oh, is it?
They're just saying, yeah. They're just like, oh, here's the Separatists, and it just shows that.
I try to forget the movie. I'm sorry about that. Forgive me.
Well, as for Clovis with his gun, he doesn't need to overcompensate.
maybe the gun's the Star Wars version of the noisy cricket.
I gave him the benefit of the doubt that the gun was that he probably wasn't supposed to be armed, but he was able to sneak that in. I don't know why. I don't know why that occurred to me, but it reminds me. And this is a stupid reference, but it reminds me of an episode of MASH, where Frank Burns had this little tiny cigarette lighter sized pistol that he pulled out on some of the North Koreans, and they just like laughed in his face. I was just thinking, okay, maybe that was just all he could sneak in. And, you know, it's really all he needed on Nemordian, because remember, these Nemordian types are cowards, right? So it's all he needed for the job. So, you know, I kind of respect how he was a guy who's, kind of ready, you know, to go to that length. Back what we were saying because of his feelings for Padme. One thing I wanted to talk about that took me out of the episode a little bit is that I thought Padme's animation in this show was horrible. Her outfits were hideous, and this isn't a fashion review. I mean, it just looked like, you know, that doesn't physically look like an outfit that could possibly work on a person. The animation was, it was her face. I mean, there was nothing about her that looked like Padme to me, and I didn't like her at all in this episode in terms of her and what she looked like. Would that jump out at anybody else, or was I just pulling for straws here?
Nope. Nope. Well, I say thank you for bringing that up, Jerry, because I thought just not just Padme, I just thought the animation in general was off. And quite frankly, I blame you, Republic Forces Radio Network, for making me pay attention to such things. But it did. but it pulled me out of the episode a couple times. And you're right. I thought it just didn't look right. And when I thought about Padme, I thought, boy, she sure has a lot of midriff wearing bearing outfits there.
I'm glad you brought up the animation.
Oh, and by the way, just cut you off for a second. The chat has informed me, Reverend Stone has corrected me, that I'm not talking animation as much as I'm talking design. But still.
Well, design. Well, see, I maybe a little disagree with that, because I thought the design of Dodd was a very good design. It showed a lot of his facial features, and it showed a lot of his movements and his lips, and it gave a lot of depth to his face, because when you see the Nemoidians in the movies, they're kind of flat faced, you know, and the only thing that really moves is their bottom lip when they talk. But here, he had the smiles and he had the wrinkles and everything. I think that he was Dodd, with the exception of Clovis, were actually the best rendered in this episode. Yoda was red, okay? Yoda had a red tinge to him, and I kept thinking, well, maybe it's the, you know, where he was at, you know, the lighting that's trying to. When he was in the Jedi Council, he was red,
and he didn't have teeth either.
And I was, to be clear, I was specifically talking about Padme's design. I mean, I think you're pretty accurate, but it was Padme who jumped out at me on this episode.
Well, I was talking about the animation, not the design. I thought the design was good. I liked how the Nemodians looked. I kind of, for me, it was a lot of the lip syncing seemed off, and it was especially noticeable when Anakin and Padme were talking, both at in their Coruscant apartment and in the Senate. That just kind of pulled me out, or maybe it's because I was bored. I don't know, listening to all the talk, but it pulled me out a couple times. And sometimes, you know, Clovis, some of the walking mechanics, it seemed a little bit more rigid. But then on the flip side, you do get some. I thought there was some good facial expressions, like close-ups with Anakin furrowing his brow and whatnot. But just the animation pulled me out a couple times.
I mean, really, I didn't think Padme looked human in certain areas. I mean, to me, it was the design, just the way a dress would fit her and, you know, show off certain attributes of her physique. It just did not seem human at all.
What really got me was the scene where they were in a cafe or restaurant or whatever, and it kept going from Padme to Clovis to Padme to Clovis. The difference is, like, obvious. Padme, you could tell she still has the look from when the series was just starting out. But then it switches over to Clovis, whose, like, facial features are animated almost perfectly. But then, and actually, if you looked right at it, it almost looks somewhat photorealistic. Then it switches to Padme, whose eyes are twice as big as should be. And it's just, I don't know, that bugged me. That bugged the heck out of me.
You know what bugged the heck out of me? That they sat there for dinner for 10 minutes and no one seemed to be eating anything. That bugged the heck out of me.
Okay, well, I think we've pretty much talked this one to everything it had. I guess I just wanted to just let everybody kind of go down the line and talk about the tag that we got for next week's episode. It seems to me like that there's this hiatus the Cartoon Network's taken for a couple weeks for probably a variety of reasons, one being Halloween weekend or what have you. And it seemed like, you know, we don't want to get started on, you know, the upcoming excitement. So, hey, do we have a episode that's, you know, a standalone throwaway episode we can insert this week and you know, not take a big break in the middle of a series? Oh, hey, Sand Spy works. It seems like there's exciting times ahead.
Okay, as far as the tease goes, which was the montage of all the there's a lot of action, a montage of action, and the first thing I kind of thought was like, oh wow, this seems like it's a brothers in arms, Clone Wars style, just really good, and that looks like the kind of military action and stuff that was promised with the Clone Wars, and I'm really looking forward to that. And as far as closing comments, or maybe you were mentioning, you know, that the teaser showed some excitement, and then you mentioned this episode as maybe being a good one-off, but with the long hiatus, maybe wouldn't you want to show maybe a little bit more of an exciting episode for the kiddies to kind of maybe keep their interests for a couple weeks? Otherwise, they're going to be like, this one's, whatever, you know, it'll come back on, whatever. It wasn't one to really necessarily keep them hooked or drooling, wanting them for more.
You know, Jason, it's interesting you said that, because somebody on the chat earlier said, hey, you know, well, could an episode like this actually turn a kid off from the show? And you know what? It's an interesting point. I don't know if one episode will do it, but they really need to bring the game.
Yeah.
Soon.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe it's okay, kids. You sat through this boring one. Look at all this new cool stuff we're going to do for you. And this one, you know, as we've mentioned in the chat, and I think I'm going to stick with it. I kind of thought this one was a soap opera space opera type episode. It was definitely different. And like I said, I still thought they were trying to cram in too much, or maybe I just wanted more with the political intrigue to find out what's going on with the political shenanigans here. Maybe I wanted to see more backstory, or wanted to see Anakin show more jealousy. You know, some of it's, you know, it's a time factor. There's only so much you can do in 22 minutes. And this is a quote unquote supposed to be a kid's show, but I thought this one was probably one of the more adult focused ones, and it was for the character reasons. But overall, I'm still going to say it was an okay episode. And maybe I want a little bit more action. This one was definitely different. I'll still say not the best, not the worst, middle of the road.
Like I said earlier I didn't see it Friday night, so I didn't see the trailer for the next one. And this break, this is news to me. This is good that I'm hearing this now, because I would have been very upset Friday night. And
you'd showed up on the chat on Sunday night wondering where was that, right?
Yeah. But I did see the clip for next episode, and it was a good 30-second clip, them landing on Geonosis and a little fighting, but I'm looking forward to that. And as far as this episode goes, it had a lot of flaws, but at the same time, there were certain things that I felt not necessarily redeemed it, but just kept it up there. So I'm going to stay with my opinion of, like, I still like it. It's not a bad episode, but it's not great. It's just okay.
I saw a little bit of the teaser. My DVR is kind of funky, you know. It kind of recorded half of what was coming up in the next couple of weeks. What I saw was a lot of action, which could be good and which could be bad, because the movie itself had tons of action. You know, had clones here, had clones there, had this and that. And we all know how that worked out. So I just have to wait and see and hold my opinion until I see next week's episode. But I'm a fan, and I'm always excited to see what's coming up next. As far as this episode goes, I like this episode. You know, I went into it thinking I'm not going to like it because, well, I went into it last week knowing that, you know, I was going to see Padme and Anakin's relationship and that kind of grow. And I got what I wanted. You know, there weren't lightsabers, there weren't, you know, blasters, but we saw a lot of characterization. We saw the relationship of Anakin and Padme. We saw a brand new character, Clovis, who, although he was only in one episode so far, he made an impression on myself. We saw that the Jedi are willing to walk the line when it comes to their beliefs and what they're going to do to win this war. We saw Anakin be cold-blooded. We haven't seen Anakin be this cold-blooded since he went and slaughtered the Sand People. And I thought this was very powerful. We saw different scenes of the different worlds. You know, I do agree that this was not for the 12-year-old, the 7 to 12-year-old kid. I think they made this, and I definitely do not think this was a throwaway episode. They made this for the fans, for the Wikipedia book thumpers. I really like this episode, and I'm going to stick to it, and I hope Marty agrees with me in 2 weeks.
Okay, well, just some of my final thoughts. I mean, I'm looking forward. I mean, everything they showed in the trailer or the preview for next week was dead on, I think, what we want to see. My fear is, and the show's getting me a little jaded, I guess, my fear is all of those highlights we saw, I'm afraid is going to get spread out over the course of like a 3 or 4 episode story arc, and that's not representative of, you know, next week's show. That said, though, it seems like more exciting, more interesting times are ahead. You know, Baron, I got to disagree with you a little bit. I think the preview is showing us what fans want to see. We want to see the Clone Wars. We want to see the action. I didn't want to see political maneuvering, and I don't think the kids. To your point, I don't know who this show is for. Don't think it's for the kids. You obviously appreciate it, so you know maybe I'm the weirdo in the minority. But I mean, I just didn't get it. I mean, to me, this was a throwaway episode. If I never see this episode again, if for some reason there's a limitation, you know, a limitation on the Blu-ray release of season 2 to where they can't fit this episode in there, that's okay by me.
If 20
years later this becomes the lost episode of the Clone Wars, I'm going to be fine.
if they put Gungan General on the Blu-ray, you're screwed with getting this one.
I hope they release this episode with direct comments.
It's funny you mention it because I would definitely, though, despite all that, this was a very coherent episode that certainly had, you know, at least a logical, cerebral plot. So is this a Bombad Jedi? This is light years ahead of Bombad Jedi, okay? So don't mistake me. This is light years ahead, but this is certainly in the bottom 25% for me. Like I said, I think next week, the preview for for the November 6th episode, I think is looking pretty exciting.
Now that you brought up, like, Bombad Jedi and Gungan General, this is more related to them. I don't know where I heard this, but I heard that for the future Jar Jar episodes, I heard that they were getting Ahmed Best back. And did anybody hear any confirmation about that? Or is this just, like, fan-based theories? But hear anything?
I have not heard
anything about that, but it would make a difference to me.
We've had someone on the chat who has at least confirmed that Ahmed himself has said so in an interview, but I guess
okay, well
I want to thank everybody on the chat and certainly you guys on the round table. Enjoyed this week's conversation. We will be back on November 8th, which is a Sunday at 9 p.m. So certainly, guys, thank you for joining, and we'll catch you next time.
All right,
sounds good.
See you
later.
We want to thank everyone for joining us on this week's roundtable. Before we close, a quick programming note. Clone Wars will not air a new episode again until November 6th. Thus, our next live chat will be on Sunday, November 8th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with the next new episode of Republic Forces Radio Network following shortly thereafter. That week, we will also have the first part of a new interview segment with James Arnold Taylor, the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi from the Clone Wars series. And remember, in order to get our podcast as soon as each new episode is released, you must subscribe to the Republic Forces Radio Network feed on iTunes, or you can find us at republicforces.com. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jerry, and I'll catch you November 8th for our next live chat. Till then, come and find us at the forums at republicforces.com. Bye now.
This has been the Republic Forces Radio Network, your source for Clone Wars coverage. Please visit our website at republicforces.com to join in our forums and find out more about the show. For more Star Wars podcasts, listen to Star Wars Action News, your source for Star Wars collecting, news, reviews, and updates. Star Wars Action News can be found at swactionnews.com. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production. Copyright 2008. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains is trademarked and copyright Lucasfilm Limited. All rights reserved. Republic Forces Radio Network, your Clone Wars news leader.